Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the new energy experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. Today, we'll be talking about how the energy transition is unfolding across Europe. What's going on in different parts of the energy sector? Are companies charging full steam ahead or being dragged along? And frankly, do customers care? What's in it for them? To answer these big questions, I'm joined by two of my colleagues here at Delta EE, who are working with companies across Europe on their journey from old energy to new energy. First, hello, Charmaine, and welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, John. It's very, very nice to be back here.
Charmaine, can you just remind our listeners as to your background, where you've been before you came to Delta?
Yeah, of course. So before I came to Delta, I've been at Delta for about 2 years now, I worked for a small challenger UK supplier, and it specialised in renewables. But before that, I worked in product development for a PV company based in the UK, but servicing clients internationally.
Great. Thanks, Charmaine. And my second guest is Andy Bradley. Hello, Andy.
Hi, John.
Andy, I'm being slightly cheeky here, but you've got a bit of a different background to Charmaine, haven't you?
I have got a bit of a different background, yes, indeed. I've just recently realised that I've spent over 30 years in the energy sector, the first 20 of which were in the old energy world. So really in the sort of mainly in the downstream oil and gas industry, and for about the last 10 years I've been in the new energy world, which is the opportunity that that I got when I joined Delta in 2010.
So a nice mix of perspectives, and we're all passionate, I think, even you, Andy, now, about the transition to new energy. But to look at the questions as to how it's unfolding across Europe and to guide our enthusiasm and passion, let's focus the discussion a bit. Now, we had a bit of a debate about whether to focus it around technology. And if we'd done that, we might have been talking about smart homes, heating, electric vehicles, storage, perhaps. But actually, we're going to structure it around three themes that cut across technology and are more fundamental about the transition to new energy. So we'll take one theme each. And my theme is the shift in value towards the timing of demand rather than only the quantity of demand. So really a shift from how much you use to when you use it. So that's mine. Charmaine, what's yours?
So mine is around the impact of digitalization, and I think everyone can recognize how much that's happening across all of our lives, but for specifically for energy, what opportunities it is enabling in this new energy world.
Okay, so very topical theme for you, which cuts across not just energy, but as you say, all sectors. And Andy, your theme.
My theme, John, is the battle for the customer relationship. So really thinking about which types of company are going to be successful in building sticky, engaged customer relationships.
Okay. So who will we be buying our energy or our services or our mobility from?
Indeed.
Okay. So we're going to take these one by one and spend a bit of time talking about each trend. So the first one is the shift in value from timing to quantity of demand. Now, the couple of drivers around this. The first one is that the cost of electricity, the marginal cost of electricity, is moving towards zero or to become very low. So what the best example of that is a wind turbine. Once you've built it, there's really no extra cost to generate electricity, bar a little bit of maintenance. Whereas with a gas power plant, there's always the cost of the gas to produce your electricity. So we're moving to a future when the marginal cost of electricity production will be close to zero. Secondly, we're going to see much greater challenges in balancing the electricity system. So making sure supply and demand are always matched, and a lot greater opportunities to use demand side resources to do this. So those are the big factors. And in terms of what's going on, Charmaine, would you say the train has left the station with this change from shift to timing to quantity yet? Are we just thinking about this, or are we starting to see this gather pace and interest and activity?
So it's interesting that you said that there's more opportunity on the demand side, because I think potentially that opportunity has always been there, and there's just more of it now. And I wonder whether that opportunity, and this comes from doing some work on the PV side, there's a huge kind of change in how people think about their energy as well. So if the marginal costs of and profit are on along energy changes that significantly, where are companies going to make their money? And naturally, people have gone towards thinking about the times where it's most expensive to generate or consume it. So the peak times of demand. And what happens if we focus time and resources on that, and that peak demand just moves somewhere else? I don't know if that's something that you've been thinking about as you thought about this section of the podcast.
I think you're right to a degree that opportunity has always been there. But the way I think about it, there are three big ways to shift demand about. One would be shift electric heating and cooling. The second would be to shift when an electric vehicle is charged. And the third probably to use a stationary battery to shift production or use of electricity around. And maybe we've always had electric heating and cooling, but we haven't had so much of the other two.
Yeah, I mean it's really interesting. What would, if you had to rank those three, John? What would be the topic that's most interesting at the moment?
The one where they're probably most interested about, I would say, is electric vehicles. But actually, if you look at the amount of demand that can be shifted, then electric heating in some countries is absolutely enormous, and that's where we're already seeing at the residential scale activity emerging at quite some scale. So in France, over 100,000 homes are having their electric heating interrupted for the benefit of the electricity system. Whereas electric vehicles, a lot of interest, and I think it will be big or bigger in the future, but obviously not there yet in terms of how many electric vehicles there are.
John, I certainly see this as one of the big needs of the energy system and the transition that it's going through, but I think the economics are still quite challenging when you look at the cost of battery storage, for example. You know, in often many cases the economics are marginal for in many applications. I think still costs will come down for sure, but increasingly as more flexibility comes onto the demand side, the drivers of the return from investments, for example, in storage, which high peak pricing, will start to soften. And so there's not a risk that actually some of these flexible solutions will end up being perhaps a cure for the volatility in the energy system, and almost cannibalize their own market.
So if you have a huge amount of flexibility, you'll have no volatility.
Absolutely.
I guess you might say that would be a nice problem to have. It depends, like, on the volume of flexibility, doesn't it? So at the moment,
I mean, it does.
Yeah. What do you think, Shami?
No. I was just going to say it does. That precise point presents the challenge that we see in this market, right? How do you develop a long-term business case for your service provision in order to serve this need for flexibility? I think that's a very key question at the moment.
Well,
there was one of the Horizon 2020 projects last year. I went to an event. I can't remember the name of the project, sorry, but it was a study in Scandinavia looking at the profiles for low energy houses, so passive houses. And one of the conclusions from the study was that a low energy house is not a low power house. So while you can reduce the energy consumption, the kilowatt hours consumed by a property, actually the kilowatt required, the maximum kilowatt required by that property may still be quite significant, particularly if you have an EV.
Yeah, so I guess that emphasizes a shift from kilowatt hours to kilowatt for that type of house.
But it throws up the challenge for the system, the need to produce or develop a capacity in the system to develop deliver that peak kilowatt required.
Well, I think, as you say, Andy, there's a long way to go in terms of the price signals around that. And therefore, you might say, well, if there's a long way to go on the price signals, there won't be that much market activity yet. But on the flip side, we are seeing some price signals, and where we see them, a huge amount of activity. So if I come back to those questions, I think energy companies across Europe are splashing the cash on acquisitions. They're developing in-house activity on aggregators, virtual power plants, building their own platforms. So I would say the train has definitely left the station here, but it's still early days, but it's going to gather and gather pace.
Yeah, I would agree with that, John. And just the interest that I imagine this kind of conversation gets from in-house trading teams must be huge. So yeah, fascinating to hear those conversations and see what people are actually doing.
And we haven't talked about the customer at all. Shame on us.
That's coming.
Okay, let's. So that was the first theme, the shift in value from quantity to timing, or kilowatt hours to kilowatt, as Andy put it. Let's move to the second theme, which is digitalization. And that's the one you picked, Charmaine, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's interesting what we've just talked about, because I think digitalization is an enabler, well, even a prerequisite for some of the things that we were just talking about. So if you think about the energy sector, and it's fairly common for people to talk about it as being old-fashioned or old energy. So we even use that phrase ourselves. But I think the key point here is that it was very much analog. So a lot of the knowledge that we had about the system may have been based on assumptions or estimations of how much power is being generated or how much power is being used. And I think things have changed externally across wider social changes. So hardware and software are much more sophisticated, and people often forget about hardware. So I think it's important to note that. But because energy was so analog, all these digitalization across the rest of our lives have had a much bigger impact on the energy sector. I think the best example for me is the transition that we've gone from in terms of thermostats. So a thermostat, which you can use to manage the temperature of your wet heating system in your house, used to be a white plastic box on the wall, which people may or may not really paid attention to. If you think about smart thermostats, they're much easier for people to engage with. They're capturing all this amazing data, and most of them are starting to use that data to intelligently inform other bits of your energy usage in your home.
Charmaine, if we look at smart thermostats as an example, the three of the biggest manufacturers or companies are Tado, who we've had on the podcast, QB, owned by Eneco, who we've had as well, and Nest. These three are all effectively relatively recent startups. They didn't exist 10 years ago. So is this opportunity, do you think it's being captured by new entrants, or can it only be captured by the energy sector? And if so, are they really engaging in digital as they should, do you think?
I mean, I think the startups have an advantage here at the moment. So maybe for the last 10 years they've had an advantage insofar as they're in theory more nimble. So they can react to changes, they can deploy software and software processes. So the use of kind of agile development processes much more quickly and easily than a large energy company may have done in the past. Now, I definitely think that's changing. So even the use of the phrase agile in terms of product development within large energy companies is changing quickly. So whether that will last long term, you know, startups, they still have to get their money to fund their development from somewhere. And in theory, energy suppliers have both the people and the capital to do that. But more importantly, large energy companies have the customers in which to test this on. And I think startups need to get customers. So getting that cut through to reach the end consumer in order to capture this data is really important for refining their product. So yeah, they may, startups will have definitely had the head start, but I'm not sure whether they will continue to have that.
Well, I'll give you one anecdote. I was talking to someone at an incumbent electricity retailer, I won't say in which country, and we were trying to do a Skype call. And the person I was speaking to got frustrated because their IT system couldn't handle Skype and said, "Ah, oh, we're being told we're meant to be a tech company and we can't even get Skype for Business working." So, from what I see, the challenges for incumbents are pretty significant to try and do this bit by bit. Andy, I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question this actually, the degree to which being an incumbent is an advantage or disadvantage. I think many of the energy suppliers, the traditional suppliers in the market, traditional players, obviously have very well-known brands. They have large numbers of customers. Whether they have customer relationships or not, perhaps a slightly different question, but they have big customer bases, and they have a very advantaged position to develop additional added value services to those customers. But they have also have huge legacy IT systems, CRMs that aren't fit for purpose. And you know, we've all heard industry stories and companies struggling to reinvent and re-engineer those internal processes and those billing machines and those marketing operations. And it has proved very, very difficult for the incumbents.
Yeah. Whereas if you're a tech company coming into the space, and we see more and more companies, new entrants, that I think describe themselves as tech companies, and they are. They've got developers, great CTOs. They're developing new systems themselves.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the trends...
Go ahead, Andy.
One of the trends we identified, John, I think a few weeks ago in one of the blogs that we wrote, we talked about how we saw sort of a B2B2C model developing internationally. So perhaps in home markets where developers have strong customer bases and a relationship with those customers, they can develop their own connectivity-based propositions with those customers directly. But outside of their core market, perhaps a region of a country, or perhaps a whole country market, they may shift to a sort of a white labeling or B2B2C approach. But it will enable some of these suppliers perhaps to internationalize their business in a way that they've never previously even thought about.
Yeah, without having to grow a brand.
Yeah. So, you know, the strength of their brand in their home market, they can leave at that with their existing customers, but then monetize the investments they've made perhaps in new technology based solutions in other markets by working with partners. So I think we'll see a changing dynamic, I think, in the future.
So, Charmaine, has the train left the station? Is it zooming along the tracks in the...
Oh, yeah, I think the train has definitely left this station. Just to bring it back to the customer, the consumer experiences digitalization of their life in so many other aspects, from utilities to more kind of maybe more fun services that they get. So the expectations are really driving how a customer expects utilities to behave. So yeah, I think it's gone. I think it's still a challenge on how you incorporate it into a legacy organization, if that's what you're doing. But yeah, well on the way there.
Great. And Charmaine, you did what I failed to do, which was talk about the customer. So well done. Okay, third theme, last but not least, Andy.
Okay, so thank you, John. The battle for the customer relationship. I mentioned earlier on about my long history in the energy sector. I've been at Delta about 10 years. And actually, just saying that reminded me, when I joined Delta, one of the things I heard quite often, I think, in my first years here was that expression that utilities don't have customers, they have meters. And it's interesting to reflect, actually, I haven't heard anyone say that for the last years. And there's been a big change already in the energy sector, I think, for the traditional incumbent suppliers to move beyond the meter and actually develop those relationships with customers. And many of them have done it quite successfully, I think. There's still, you know, a lot of activity and work going on there. But the industry's moved a long way, I think, in the last few years.
So who are they battling against then, and what they're battling for? If they're getting those, starting to get this better relationship, what's this battle?
Well, they've started to make progress with it. But I think within the energy sector, what you're seeing is really a breakdown within the traditional sort of compartmentalized energy systems. So, you know, the transport sector is starting to converge with the generation sector. In the heat sector, which has always been traditionally sort of isolated, is starting to become much more electrified and connected with the electricity sector. So you're starting to see this convergence within the energy sector, but I think crucially also seeing a breaking down of barriers with other industry verticals. So the automotive sector, for the first time, perhaps is thinking about doing more than just selling a car to a customer. The telco sector, in some markets, telcos already retail energy. Home services generally, I think, is becoming a much more active and dynamic space. So there are different industry verticals, I think, starting to compete for these customer relationships.
Well, my favorite example, I think, is Volkswagen, and it's on the topical EV topic, but Volkswagen subsidiary Elli being established to sell not only EVs but energy and energy related services to customers. And at the same time, we see some energy companies trying to sell EVs to customers. So as a customer, will I buy things separately? Will I buy the package from my automotive company, or will I buy it from my energy company? Maybe that's quite an interesting question that we can all ask ourselves. What would we do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you see many different types of company now starting to try and create new types of relationships. And you know, it's part of a wider trend in our economy, I think, actually away from products towards solutions and services. You know, we see that obviously, you know, really clearly, I think, in the energy space. You know, all of the energy companies now see that the future is really services and not commodity. But I think generally across most industries, actually, business models and interaction with customers is moving towards almost a subscription basis for everything. You know, you get mobility as a service, you get furniture as a service, you almost look at any industry sector, I think, and see as a service type propositions starting to be developed. You know, the whole area of property tech, you know, prop tech seems to be a word I see, you know, becoming more and more frequently used. And I think that's the convergence area with the energy sector. So I think this battle for the customer relationship is starting to become very complex, multifaceted, different types of company, you know, which is creating obviously huge challenges for the incumbents because they have a lot to lose, but also I think huge opportunities to work out the types of partnerships and collaboration that actually can add value to your own customer base.
So let's come back to the train analogy, Andy. If the train being in the station is that the battle is really yet to start, or the train zooming down the tracks means that this battle is well underway and is really fierce, where are we?
I think with this one, the train is still firmly at the platform for me. I think fundamentally, you know what? A lot of customers still don't care. And I think until customers really care about something, the engagement is always going to be a struggle. And, you know, that's why I think e-mobility is really interesting in the energy space, because the electric vehicles are a better car. And actually, when the price point drops further and they become, you know, more financially viable, perhaps for more customers, actually customers, I believe, will want one of these as their next car because it's a better product. And I think if you get that type of engagement, then you're pushing an open door, and the companies that can maximize that will, I think, have an advantage in terms of getting those sticky customer relationships. Until you get that kind of pull from the customer, I think it's quite challenging.
Okay, so train in the station. Charmaine, your train was off down the tracks already.
Long gone.
Long gone. And my train, I think, was just starting to pull away from the station. Three big changes that are in various different stages of development across the energy sector. Thanks both Charmaine and Andy for sharing your thoughts in this stepping back and looking at the energy sector. Thank you to listeners for joining. This is episode 7 of the first series, so we have one more episode next week, that will be episode 8, and then we're taking a 2-week break and we'll be back in June. So thanks for listening, and speak to you next week. Goodbye.